You're tuned into the Awakening Zone Radio Network, your news and information source for empowered spiritual awakening.
Hello, this is Karen Elkins from Science to Sage Radio, and today our guest is Cynthia Sue Larson, and this is where the magazine comes alive, and this month she's going to actually make a contribution to the magazine, because I think it will be perfect, because we're going to be speaking about visionaries and how we actually move into the next phase. And so Cynthia is a best-selling author, a life coach, an interpersonal speaker who optimizes life possibilities with quantum physics principles. She's known as the quantum optimist. Cynthia helps people discover their many possibilities and jump into their favorite lives while staying focused on the question, how good can it get? So, Cynthia, welcome.
Thank you, Karen. It's a pleasure
Thank
to be here.
Thank you very much. You know what? It's kind of, well, we talked yesterday, and it was kind of fun. There was one I want to thank Cynthia, because as you guys know, every time I do read their books, and I do read them quite depth, and I had quite a fun experience playing with your book, because what is quantum jumps? And you have tons of exercises in the book. So, I mean, I have to sit there. I had quite a good weekend jumping all around. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're
quite
welcome.
Fun.
Yeah, yeah. I love the idea of it. Yep. So it's something I use, too. And I think that's always a good testimony or a testament to any book is when the author themselves is impressed with it. You can usually tell because it's something that is that useful and that much of a daily part of everyone's lives.
And it made me more aware of one of some of the elusive dreams that I woke up to this morning of walking into paradise, and it was like, wow. So thank you for that one. That was also a really yummy one this morning. So, you know,
sounds
it just
like
makes
a good
you more
dream.
Cognitive. It really was a good dream, you know. It was, because I think as many of us are looking and, you know, how is this quantum jump into a new age going to begin, and how do we create paradise on Earth, right? And I walked
right.
in, and there was this portal, and I walked into it, and it was like there was no gate, there was no nothing, and it was like the old paradise of way back when. And then there was the lion standing there, and it was like, ooh. And it was like, no, I need to be friends with the lion. And then I, you know, he kind of cuddled up to me, and I was became not, you know, like walking in where normally you would be fearful. You weren't fearful. It's like you walked into his arms. You kind of like played with his fuzzy fur, and you walked out more like the tiger that was tame, that where you could be your higher essence self, but without confrontation, with being in a place of peace and having peace all around you. It was such a yummy, yummy experience. So, yeah.
And you've touched on the essence of what I consider to be the key to success, and that is to make friends with the thing that you might be most afraid of. Because there's something magical that happens when you do that. And I know some people might think, oh, a lion, that's a guardian. But if you really encounter a real-life lion, there's that moment of goosebumps that just covers your whole body. I know you must have felt it in the dream. You know, you're looking at that lion, and it's like, oh, my gosh. But then you realize, I'm here now. And just by coming face-to-face with this, by moving fearlessly in the direction of your dreams, and that's what was required in your dream. That's such a great example. I love it.
I did, too. I was like, thank you. And I thought, wow, thank you for that one.
Oh, I love it.
How do one, and the book really does invite us to look at quantum in so many ways that we language it. Because you said Larry Doocy said to you, don't name your book quantum, it's overused. And in your
right.
book there's all these weirdness on microscopic scale, superposition, cohesive entanglement, tunneling, what goes on, all these quantum states. So let's start from the beginning. As you say here, there is a dawning of a new age.
Yes.
That is doing much more than bringing us to quantum computers and quantum technology. It's helping us understand our quantum nature. So why don't you explain what that is?
Okay, before I will, and I want to just quickly say, I want to get Larry off the hook here, because when he told me...
He's such a sweetie.
Like,
I really enjoyed the show with him. Anyway.
It goes back like 15 years. When Dr. Doocy was cautioning me, and this is for a totally different book I was writing at the time, but related. It was about reality shifts. And for that manuscript, the first question he asked me was, you won't be using the word quantum in the title, right? And I said, oh, no. And he said, good. Please don't. That word has been completely overused. That was 15 years ago. So, you know, and I have stayed away from using the word. Now, what he meant, and I'm going to dive into what do I mean by the quantum age, what Dr. Doocy meant was, let's not overuse a word without giving it the proper respect and the proper meaning. So instead of just tossing around a word lightly, it's important to bring up the background of it, of that word, and what does it really mean? And I do have a degree in physics from UC Berkeley, so when I say welcome to the quantum age, I'm saying it with all respect, with all seriousness, and with the recognition that humanity now has a position of being stewards and guardians for this new heralding in of what literally is a new quantum age. And I mean it literally. I mean that we have crossed a threshold as of September 2013, and I mentioned that in the book about what happened is that a D-Wave 2 computer was purchased by Google and Ames Research Center at NASA. And so they spent $17 million of their combined money to purchase something that has 512 qubit processing power. What's going on with all that? And this is where you're asking, what are those quantum phenomenon, quantum properties that would herald in this quantum age? Well, we recognize when something happens, like a new computer, like the ENIAC was sort of the beginning of our information age. That was the ENIAC computer that filled an entire room. It was enormous. I think there were pictures taken. There were women running around in the bowels of this monster computer just getting things done inside of it. And it was a computer, yes. And it was amazing at its time. But now anybody that's got a laptop computer has something that's much more powerful than that ENIAC was originally. The same thing is about to happen on a new scale. And you may wonder, well, what's a computer? A computer is a computer, right? They're all the same. No, they're not all the same. Something extraordinary has just happened, and most people are blissfully unaware of it. But in order for a quantum computer to work, what's happening now is on the macroscopic scale, we now have something that was considered impossible just generations ago. I think we're getting used to the impossible happening all the time, so it's hard for any particular news story to catch our attention. But in the last couple of years, I was noticing, as the quantum computer technology was coming up to speed, that we are seeing things like teleportation happening on a macroscopic scale. Teleportation of information, yes, but it's still something that's happening at the human scale. Other things that are happening are superposition of states, which is required for a quantum computer to operate. It's required that I mentioned those qubits that are inside that computer, they're holding a state of what you might think of as true and false at the same time, two different spins simultaneously, because it's working with a superconductor fluid. It's a supercooled superconductor. So what's making it operate and what's giving it that processing power is something called squids, which doesn't mean these are not the ocean-going kinds of squids, but these are the kind of superconducting quantum interference device, and that the interference device part of it is just the fact that that you can have those simultaneity of states. You can have a superposition of states. The other amazing properties of quantum physics, I'll just zip through them really quickly, would be coherence, where all of those different quantum aspects would be working together. You've heard of entanglement, of course. Yeah, entanglement.
Can we go back a little slower? Just because I want to go back to the superposition state. Because if I understand that right, because I think that one was actually quite interesting, and I really want to understand coherence better, right? The superposition state, because that is like, if I understand, I've been introduced, as I mentioned to you before, Don Estes' work, and he said there's something called the sine wave and the cosine wave, and that's something that we don't necessarily understand. And with his new device called the particle, it looks at the two waves. One is the imaginary, he calls it, and one is the real. So, but he's also saying at any point in time, you're picking between this state or that state. You're picking between a positive or a negative charge. And in the middle is the amplifier that will amplify your choice. But the sine waves are not necessarily, they're aspects of the same, but you're still picking between the two. Do I understand that correctly?
Yeah, what's happening in one of these quantum computers, and it's apparently happening in all of nature, which we'll get into in a bit. But the computers are the way that we can start studying things, and math is a great tool for making creating kind of a metaphor, or it's a way for us to visualize things.
Okay.
Because we've got the math where you can, sine waves and cosine waves both look very similar. In fact, to the untrained eye, you know, the only difference really is the starting point, like where they call the origin. One originates starting at zero, one starts at one, and then they go up and down with a, you know, they, if you imagine like this waveform that's going up and down and up and down, looks a little like a roller coaster, but a very simple one. And that's, mm-hmm. sine waves and cosine waves look like that. So it's a pretty good analogy for what's going on in quantum processors, because it's a wave function. And so quantum physics is all about wave functions. Now, sine waves and cosine waves, they're set up so that when one is cresting and going all the way up, the other one's just out of phase with that first wave. In a quantum processor, you're looking always at choosing between two states. Yes. One would be, because you may have heard that when you observe a quantum wave function, you collapse the wave function. That's one interpretation of quantum physics, pretty good one. And it's one in which, you know, it seems like when an observer comes along, then suddenly a choice has to be made. You know, what state is this wave function in? And
okay.
So that's, I think, what Don Estes is talking about there, and it's a brilliant analogy, really good. And that's indeed what's happening. What's really going on, though, when you bring the quantum, the world of the very, very small into the world of our world, the human scale mm-hmm. world, this is something that has been very controversial. You know, a lot of physicists even today would say, you know, balderdash, there's no way that you could bring something from the quantum scale into the macroscopic scale. And they would say that the Schrodinger's cat mental problem is just that. It's something that's not happening all the time in our daily lives. And they would say, but I would disagree with that, actually. And my book, Quantum Jumps, describes some of the science that shows that we've already crossed that threshold, not just because we have that quantum computer sitting here in California, that D-Wave 2, that there's a whole new department now at NASA Ames of programmers learning how to program that thing, learning how to work with an operating system and programming languages that can effectively make use of the fact that you're working with that simultaneity of existing states. You've got true and false. You've got both the sine and the cosine waves working together. It's much more like Eastern logic, basically, because in the East, they work with fourfold logic. They don't think in terms of true and false, black and white. Eastern logic accepts the fact that sometimes something can be true and false. Now, that's very much like a quantum computer. It is true and false. It's in a superposition of states. It hasn't chosen yet exactly where it's going to end up. It's existing as a probability. And what's exciting to me about that is that it allows us to basically recognize that we can incorporate things like intuition in our daily lives. And actually, we've got evidence that this is happening in the biological world, that the plants that are, you know, all around this planet are using that for things like photosynthesis. They're actually using this, they're better computers in the quantum realm than our current D-Wave 2 is, because any plant that can photosynthesize has something like a 95 to 98% efficiency rate of doing the hard math, the hard problem of optimizing the path of a photon to where that plant can store that light energy, which comes in as a quantum, you know, little photon of light is a quantum particle. It takes that quantum particle, somehow miraculously routes it through a network of possible paths to get to the most efficient way to, you know, transport that little photon and transform it into energy for the plant. When I say they achieve 95 to 98%, you know, efficiency at this, that's just extraordinary, because we don't have any current processing power that can match that. And it's not just plants that are doing this. So the whole natural world is working with these quantum properties at a macroscopic scale, and we are just starting to do that as of September 2013. So when Don Estes is showing you something, and that's an amazing technology he's got there, that can show you, like, real time, you know, here's this so-called quantum foam, if you will. I don't know what he calls it, but that's what I would call it. It's like looking at the possibility of what's out there. And you can see, like, this is where, as you're coming through with an intention, you can actually shape, you know, where this is going to be going. You can choose and be more conscious than usual. Because usually when we make these choices, we're doing it on a subconscious level.
Where, so I think the word you're saying is key, which he says shape. We shape the reality, because what Don would say is, and it kind of reminds me of the dream of Vishnu where the bubbles come out, you know, the thought bubbles come out. And he basically says we live in a toroidal vacuum. And so even us are like an energetic field, like a battery. And then this is like where our essence is. But through that matrix, we are unfolding through patterns. And when his porticles, it's very cool, you actually see your word spoken into a fractal dimensional construct, which is amazing. So we are literally within that holographic matrix speaking our geometry into our reality.
And what I would call it, and I love the holographic term, is definitely, you're spot on there, and seems to be a growing body of evidence to support that. And what makes my work, I think it's very supportive of what Don's doing, but it's a little bit different, is that I'm documenting the way that we can make use of what I call a holographic multiverse model, making use of the fact that the quantum phenomena are occurring in our daily lives, and that we can choose a pre-existing universe of possibility that already exists. And so I think the bridge is finding that comfort level that we can do something, speak with, and move with, you know, create and shape, as you say, the energy to move into that universe. So we are the ones, and when I say we, it gets to the question of who are we, what are we, you know, who am I? And I would say that the truth of our nature is consciousness. What we're literally doing is moving between these superpositions of states, these simultaneously existing multitude of realities. And I have a basis for saying that. I'm not just coming out of left field here because it's an extraordinary claim. And what I'm really saying is based on my personally observing decades of what I call reality shifts, where people would have, for example, inoperable brain tumor or inoperable liver cancer, or, you know, any of a number of things, like a broken bone. I've actually literally seen people move from a reality of being, you know, at death's door to completely healed instantaneously. And so what I'm suggesting is, when you look for what's the mechanism for that, and a lot of people would love to know, what the heck is going on here? Because people that have been sharing stories on my Reality Shifters site for the last 15 years, first, they're relieved to find out, wow, you know, I'm not the only one that's noticing things are appearing, disappearing, transforming, and transporting, as well as changes in time. And so for the last 15 years, I've been one of the same people wondering, what's the mechanism? You know, how can we really tie together the science of what's been unfolding in the laboratories around the world with the ancient traditions that shamans have known about for millennia? And that's my real goal, is to find something that works in real life, that any of our first peoples in the world, the indigenous ones, and that's what I love about your science to sage. I love it, because you have the same love for bringing together the very ancient wisdom with what's really cutting edge. What are we learning?
I think the two are merging right now. I think that's
merging.
What's so interesting. Yeah, and the beautiful, I love that, I've seen this quote before, but I love it, and you have it in your book, and it's all matter originates and exists only by virtue of a force by which brings the particle of an atom to vibration and holds this most minute solar system, and must assume behind this force that existence of consciousness and intelligence, and that's from Planck, is mind. Mind is the matrix of all matter. And, that's how the whole idea of quantum jumping goes, right?
Right. That's exactly it. It also ties in with what William James once said. And thank you for quoting Max Planck. I think he deserves a lot of credit, and I give him that credit in the book because, you know, he's basically the father of what we would now know as quantum physics. He's the one that was able to envision the nature of this amazing universe, which I think otherwise only poets like Rumi had really fully grasped. But I want to bring up William James, as well as the poet Rumi, who I love so much, and Max Planck, because I think this is something that all of them converge on, and that's what I bring together in my book. And William James, father of American psychology, was the first one to point out that if you want a property or a quality, then act as if you already possess it. So he's got this intrinsic knowledge, just like what the quote you just read from Max Planck, that everything we talk about, everything we regard as existing, postulates consciousness. When you put these two ideas together, that whatever you want, just be that. And you, and then you realize, like Max Planck is saying, everything we talk about, everything we regard as existing, postulates consciousness. What that's really saying is we are consciousness. Yes, we have a body, but the body is kind of like a shoe that we put on. It's more like the clothing that we're wearing. It's kind of like when you make that decision, I'm not going to have cancer anymore. And we'll get to that because some people, and they have a legitimate concern. Like, well, I know people that have died of cancer. Well, yes, indeed. And I'm not saying that doesn't happen. What I'm saying is that there are opportunities for us at many points to make a jump from one reality to another. And all realities are being experienced. So I mean, this is a huge, huge concept, but it's one that I think is timely because right now there's, for the first time I think in the history of the world, there's a majority of physicists that were recently polled at a conference that were saying, yes, you and me and everyone else exists in a superposition of states. In other words, one of us might be dying of cancer, for example, and another version of you might not be. And so this I think, is a brilliant concept for us to embrace because it enables us, like you were saying earlier, to start visualizing what would heaven on earth be like. If we're able to optimize our reality the way that a plant, when it photosynthesizes, can optimize its reality, if we can become 98% efficient at, you know, doing things that are very simple but very powerful, like doing things that are in support of what's best for all concerned. You know, these are big concepts, and we are at the dawn of the awakening of humankind.
Does that go back to, like, I remember in the part, and I, you know what, at the time I didn't get it, and I'm getting it more now. It's the importance of becoming the observer in the reality that we're in. And is becoming that observer also helping us to then make choices?
Yeah.
Back,
most of us as observers are operating on a subconscious level. And so the point when you watch a movie like What the Bleep Do We Know, when you read a book like The Secret, you know, people are studying these things, and it's been a big topic for some time now. And so that focus on the observer is extremely important. But I think what tends to get lost and what people don't recognize is just exactly what's going on there. You know, it's important to be the observer because you have the power, and the reason I keep asking that question, how good can it get? I want to train our subconscious, train it, you know, get it in that habit of looking for what's good, you know, catch the universe being good, you know, catch the multiverse being settled in a state that's perhaps outlandishly unrealistic in the sense people tend to expect things to go wrong. But I don't consider realism to be necessitated to be the average of all good and bad, or to be the average of, you know, factoring in all the possible problems. And I'll explain why I see some scientific validation for my optimistic viewpoint in a minute. But what I really want to point out is when you catch things being good, when you ask how good can it get, that's you training your subconscious observer, which is really most of where these things are happening. You know, it's your gut feelings. It's that emotional reaction you have when you hear any piece of news. News in itself is never good or bad. It's just news. How we interpret that news is everything. So learning and training yourself through meditation, through mindfulness, to recognize that whatever the news is, you can have a goosebumpy, super happy, super excited, like, oh my gosh, this is the most amazing thing in the world. How good can it get reaction no matter what that news is? No, it takes tremendous training.
You know how I relate to that? I had a thought on that one the other day.
You know,
like sometimes when we people have gone through boyfriends, husbands, wives, or relationships, right? And sometimes we get bitter because something didn't turn out the way we did or we were angry at something. And I think what I got to see is there's never been a relationship that I've had, friends, whatever, that hadn't taught me something.
Exactly.
And then if I can just look at the gift that they gave me of awareness of an aspect of myself that I would not have known without them, then I can look at and see it as the gift. And that's how good it can get because they gift me something. They didn't disappoint me or something.
Yeah, and that gets back to that dream that you had with the lion at the gate of, you know, paradise and recognizing, because that lion is important, and that's an archetypal image you got there. I love it. It's very Jungian. Because it's showing us, you know, that's for all of us. When you get to that gate of, you know, heaven on earth and paradise, and you realize, but I have to get past this lion. The lion is both a guardian, you know, but it's also presenting a challenge to all, each of us to recognize, did you get it yet? Did you get the gift from your ex? You know, did you get the gift from the fact that you just got fired? You just lost your job. You've just been, you know, diagnosed with cancer, whatever the bad news might be. That is your lion at the gate. And that's your ability to really grab life with a whole new vigor. And it really draws our attention in, because sometimes we go on autopilot in our lives. We just end up in a sort of a, we're shuffling around this mortal coil. And you don't want to be shuffling around the mortal coil. You know, I don't think that's really our optimal way of living. I think our optimal life is more like bouncing around, you know, dancing around, singing, spinning, you know, embracing life with a tremendous vigor and a fearlessness. Because that's what we honor and value in all of our role models. And when you look to see who do you most respect in terms of the people that seem to really have it together, they're the ones that embrace life, you know, all of it. And they would say, there's the lion at the gate. And just like recognizing there's a gift from that relationship breakup. It's not time wasted. It's lessons learned. And an opening of my heart and a breaking of my heart. And now I can love much more deeply. I've been hurt, but I'm going to love again. You know, there's some indomitable quality to the human spirit that we intrinsically respect, and that when we see it, we just know that is a person who's really got it. And we desire that for ourselves. And so the challenge and the opportunity is that we're all being, that hand is being extended to us, you know, come to the gate of paradise. You know, don't be afraid of the lion at the gate. That's just to look straight into your eyes and to acknowledge whatever it is that you're most afraid of. And you have to take that and walk right through it. And that's what it takes to do the quantum jumping I talk about in my book. It's all about recognizing you're going to have to act as if, and I mean act with all of your being, act on the level of that is who you now are. You know, it's recognizing I am jumping into that reality where I have the best possible relationship. And, you know, maybe this one I was in wasn't it for me. But now I know that I'm going to be in relationship with myself. I'm going to love life. And the person of my dreams will be finding me. They're going to be reaching for me, just as my best possible future self is helping me to make that leap.
Well, it's interesting because at the end of the dream, I was my best self, and I was still a tigress, but I was a tame tigress.
Yeah, and that's the key, too. You became the tiger. Yeah. You're like, that quality became you. Like, you had that ferocity,
yeah,
but with the balance of qualities. That's really good.
So I think, I think thank you, because I think it was from reading your book and doing so many of the processes this weekend. So here's the question. So what is the true nature of reality in this way? That's a question. So what is the true nature? You know, so what is quantum
jumping? That gets into the heart of what is this theory of everything. And I don't purport to have the theory of everything. That's not really what my book is about, you know, just to be clear about that. But I do present a model which is not, you know, I give it as much evidence as I can to support. First, it combines two things, really. One, this model of reality I'm presenting is that of a holographic multiverse. What I mean by that,
okay,
if you hold your hand in front of you, we're just going to look at five possible realities. Those are your five fingers. But notice they're all connected with the palm of your hand. So when you wiggle your fingers around, you can imagine you can jump from one reality to another. And in the model, it's much more like bubbles in basically like that vacuum or whatever you were talking about before, where you've got the multiverse would actually look a lot more like a whole bunch of little universes surrounded by a big bubble. So they're all in one, but they're all connected with these wormholes connecting between the two, you know, any number of universes. So you can be jumping from one to another. You can jump from one universe where you might have cancer to another where it's suddenly you've had a complete remission of that cancer. And I share stories in the book from people who've done that. But lots of other jumps are not just healing ones. They're a jump of confidence, a jump of suddenly feeling that you've got this together. You can be the person of your dreams. It's just little step, each little step at a time is a quantum jump. And so that model, you know, with all the fingers and the connected hand, is you've got the awareness through consciousness that you are all those different possible yous. You can imagine the person that you might be that's very timid right now, or you can imagine the person who's just like, okay, come on, let's get moving with this. And that's exactly, again, an example William James once used of just being in bed on a freezing cold morning, not wanting to get out of the covers, not wanting to, but there's that moment suddenly where you are the person that gets out of that bed. He doesn't describe it in a holographic multiverse way. He describes it as you have that, you found the willpower. And that's really the key to it, the willpower, recognizing I'm going to do what it takes to be that person that gets out of bed right now. And the dynamics of it, the physics of it, is that we are basically blinking in and out of existence constantly. And so in those little here we are, here we're not, you know, we're sort of blipping in and out. That's how we can maintain that literal superposition of states. So each one of us is at any moment the person who's deciding to do this and therefore doing it, like saying a certain thing, or the person who's doing or saying something slightly different. Every decision we make, we're moving into a different universe. And so there's that whole business going on. And I'm bringing the quantum right in with it because, to me, they all go together. So when you're entangled, as we each are, with the members of the families that we love and the friends who we consider so meaningful to us, you know, your pets, your loved ones, your home, your car, your valuables, everything that you're entangled with that you love that deeply, you have a level of coherence with. That means you all move together as a group sometimes. So you can move together into a reality. This is a level of teamwork that occurs in the quantum realm that we can harness all the time. And I touch on that in the book to some degree. So these are some of the big concepts of how this whole thing is working and what we're doing with it.
No, I get that. You mentioned here that the quantum particles are not always particles, but sometimes exist as pure energy. Is that basically when they're in between states and they're going from one state to the other?
Yes. So this gets into a lot of the actual physics and some of the experiments that people are familiar with, such as the double slit experiment. And I think that's been talked about for decades now. I think most people have heard about it. They might not know what it means exactly. But this gets to that question you asked earlier about the observer. And so it's a thought experiment when you look at a particle such as a photon, which you expect a photon to just go, if it's one particle at sometimes and sometimes it's a wave function, you still expect it to choose pretty much to go through one or the other slit. If it's in its particle form, then it would indeed be measured going through one slit. So if you've got imagine there's a wall and it's got two little slats or slits in it, kind of like you'd put a small letter through a slot, you know, like that. And so a photon can either choose to go through one or the other. As long as you're monitoring and you've got particle detectors on those two slits, then that particle will indeed be caught and measured and observed going through one or the other slit. But what gets weird is strange things are observed to happen with these double slit experiments. Such as, I need to explain, when the particle is in the form of a wave, because there's a dual nature to a photon, it can either be a wave function, and waves, as you know, they create ripples, and you can look at what's known as diffraction patterns. So just think of it as the tops of the waves, you know, just sort of splashing on the shore. You'll see waves coming in, and you're familiar when you're at the ocean. You hear the waves crashing, and it just comes in and goes out. So when a wave goes through the double slits and you've got lots of light going through, then you'd see a diffraction pattern on the wall behind, which is acting as a screen, and you'll see bands of brighter light where the particles came through and they got, you know, they hit some sort of a medium that lights up or, you know, otherwise shows like a photon landed here. And so if it's doing that, and you'll see these bright bands where the photons hit, and the dark lines where there's destructive interference and those the photons didn't come together so much. This works better if you can see it, but I'm just trying to describe it. Well, what gets weird, though, about the experiment, it's like if you're doing this experiment, what was observed to happen were some impossible things. Like if one photon is shot through at a time, scientists would observe, and as long as they're not measuring, you know, they're not trying to catch it being a particle, they can get that the photon to go through the two slits. But the weird thing is, one photon will interfere with itself and create a diffraction pattern on that screen, on that wall. That should be impossible because we're expecting that photon chose to either be, you know, true or false, left or right, go through one slit or the other. But it somehow apparently went through both. But how can that be? Because it's one photon.
Mm.
So this is the nature of quantum physics that, and this is the reason physicists often say that if you say you understand quantum physics, you're probably not telling the truth. Because we don't yet have a paradigm to explain the whole thing. All we have are interpretations.
Okay. Does that go to the notion of parallel worlds then? One
it
going
does.
In one direction and another?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because when Hugh Everett III came up with a theory of the many worlds interpretation, he was the person saying, what if we've got many possible realities? That would account for this. And that was a brilliant idea. And then another idea that came forward was David Bohm, who said, what if we have a holographic universe where everything is interconnected, kind of like the holodeck on Star Trek, you know, where you can you can have this pretend world and everything in it is connected to everything else. We have holographic pictures, and if you break one of those pictures, the entire image is in every little fractured piece of that holographic image from a certain perspective. And so that, when you put those two ideas together, which is what's happening now, and that's what the brilliant work of Raphael Busso at UC Berkeley, a physicist there. I've been tracking his work for years, and I was so excited this last year when the Higgs boson was found that this theory of supersymmetry looks like it's been shelved. In other words, those people that wanted to say all the good and all the bad in the universe must balance. You have a good day, then you have to have a bad day, you know, that kind of thing, making it really banal. Really basic. That's what symmetry is about. It's basically like you can't just keep getting better and better. You can't ask that question, how good can it get, and go into heaven on earth. That's what the symmetry people were saying. I'm just really oversimplifying. So you can see why I'm thrilled, because I am an optimist, to see the news that symmetry, this is another big scientific discussion, but when the Higgs boson was found, symmetry was kind of, it had to be shelved because this amazing what they called the God particle was supposed to have the mass to equivalent to a whole bunch of regular particles. If you imagine a teeter-totter, I like to use this example of children on a teeter-totter, and they were looking for a God particle that could sit on one side of a teeter-totter with hundreds of kids on the other side or hundreds of particles, because the dark matter in the universe seems to be having a very phenomenal, powerful effect on things. We don't know what that dark matter is. We don't know why our universe behaves the way it does. And we're having trouble building a theory of everything to bring the quantum scale together with classical physics. So the God particle, I'm just calling it that for short nickname right now, was expected to show some... Yeah, because that's what people called it. They were looking for, okay, we're expecting symmetry. We're expecting, you put that heavy particle that has such a big influence on matter, you put it on one side of that teeter-totter, and it'll balance all the rest. Okay, whoops, and a big surprise. Because that God particle, the Higgs boson, is not that heavy. It is not that massive. And so the reason this is such a huge discovery and such a big boon for the holographic multiverse theorists is because when Raphael Busso is proposing, what if we're not in a symmetrical universe? What if we're in some fringy thing that's kind of statistically improbable? If you follow Douglas Adams and the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe books, you know, it's sort of like, you know, something is like the infinite improbability device that was used to power those spaceships. I love that. Infinite improbability. Well, we're kind of in a highly improbable universe. I know. So when the Higgs boson was found, Douglas Adams, if he was alive, would love that. He'd be like, yay, you know, that infinite improbability device is here. You know, we can do it now. Because it's basically operating on the function that if something is highly improbable, then it kind of makes a beeline for it. And that's what our universe seems to be doing, actually. And so this holographic multiverse, other scientists were saying, well, if there is this multiverse, we should see signs of it in the cosmic background radiation. And recently, thanks to findings from the telescope that is being used in Europe, they found evidence with the cosmic background radiation from the Big Bang of other parallel universes on the outside of ours. So this is some of that science I said would be supporting this concept that we do live in a holographic multiverse. And currently there are three different, totally different scientific studies that are all pointing the same direction that I mentioned in my book, Quantum Jumps. Maybe I shouldn't go into all that detail, but you can get the idea here that this is really the mechanism, which is what you're asking. You know, you were saying, what's the model for what's going on here? And the model is we're in this holographic multiverse. We're always choosing which reality we're going to jump into next. We're always jumping, but we're not always conscious that we're jumping. And so this book and others like it that are helping us become conscious, like, what is this reality you're shaping, is one way to ask the question. That's what Don Estes is asking. And I'm asking, what is it that you're jumping into? Very similar questions. And
there's a really interesting part in your book. I'm sorry. Should I let you finish your?
Go ahead. Sure.
No, I would love to, because we're talking about the science, and I want to make sure, because we've got about 20 minutes, so we can go a little longer if you want. Because I think I'd love to give them an experience of quantum jumping. This whole notion that there was one thing in your book I thought was kind of interesting, because it actually goes back to talking with Larry last week or 2 weeks ago, and it's like you said in this book, Proof from Heaven, that both of these people experienced a place of total love and fear in which all possibilities were viewable. You want to explain that?
I love that, and thank you for tying it into that. This is absolutely the key. Yes, I'd love to explain that.
Yeah.
In my book, I ask the question, I point out, whenever you want to study something, you want to learn it from people that are the experts at it. You want to go to the people that really are doing quite well at it. And who are those people, I ask in Quantum Jumps? You know, how can we find them? Who are the people that are experiencing the kind of things I'm talking about, where they've got this miraculous return to well-being and health from having been at death's door? These are actually the near-death experiencers. They are the meditators, and they are the lucid dreamers. Now, two of these categories are things we can actually master and learn. The third one, I don't recommend people actively seek out a near-death experience for obvious reasons. You know, there's a chance you might not make it through. So, but I am a near-death experiencer myself. I am a lucid dreamer, and I'm a meditator. I don't think there's any accident that I see so many, that I'm so conscious of that many quantum jumps. I think the more of these things you have at your disposal, then the greater the ability you have to move into, you know, to consciously choose new realities. I know that that's true from my experience. And so I love your question about this wonderful state of being. What you're really describing is that one mind consciousness. And I don't know, I didn't get to the privilege of hearing Larry Dossey interviewed, but he's one of my heroes. And I love his new book, One Mind, because it gets to the heart of what I consider the key to getting to the next reality. So you want to get to that state of awareness of superposition of all states. This is, meditators can access that awareness that we are the ones choosing between all possible realities. And lucid dreamers are able, lucid dreaming, I should explain what I mean. It means that you can wake up inside of a dream. So, for example, when you've got that dream that you're at the gates of paradise and you see that lion, if, for example, in that dream you're aware, I'm awake in this dream. Like, this is a dream I'm having. And when you know that, then you're a lucid dreamer. And when you know that, then you're getting the benefit of that dream all the time. It means you wake up and you still have that dream with you. It's an awareness that you're making choices there that are affecting your real life. You can ask questions in the dream about things in your life. You can ask to see the true nature of reality. You can ask, which is a big question, and it might take a while to get there, but you know, you might have an epiphany, and it might be difficult to explain later. And that's also what these near-death experiencers receive. And so some of the people that have recently written about such experiences, like Anita Moorjani, I mentioned her in my book and describe some of the highlights that she talks about in her book, Dying to Be Me, when she, and I love her story, because she also describes, you know, getting to what Larry Dossey is describing as this one mind consciousness, where you have a sense of fearlessness and you're able to access pretty much everything that is consciousness. So you have that I am awareness from the state of pure being and pure love. And words really fail to describe it because it's like being everything and far, much, much more than our usual limited range of sensory experience. So just like lucid dreamers often dream in colors that are far broader than the spectrum that we normally see, you can see beyond red, beyond purple, beyond violet, and you can also hear things that are at a deeper level beyond our normal range of hearing. You know, we have super sensing that often accompanies the lucid dream, the meditation, and the near-death experience. And there's a reason for that, because that's when you get into what is reality, it's much bigger than our usual narrow bandwidth of sensory experience provides for. So I'm talking a lot, and I don't know if I'm really answering your question.
No, you're doing great. No, it's great, great. You know what I'd really love? Because you had an exercise in your book, and it's this, and I think this really equates to what we're talking about. Imagine many possible yous. Do you mind doing an exercise with us as a group?
I'd love to. And so,
I just think that was such a, it so relates to what we're doing and talking about.
Okay. I don't remember exactly where that one is, but if you tell me which chapter it was in.
Maybe not on that page. I'm looking. Go to and, the and area around
looking,
page 46.
Okay, good.
It's page
well, 46. Early in the book. Okay. Yeah, later in the book I describe some of the science that this book is fun because I like to use proven and tested techniques in the book, which I do. This one is a meditation exercise. And so on page 47, and it's imagining many possible yous. So this one, we can do this as long as it's safe for you as you're listening to close your eyes. Obviously, if it's not safe, don't do this. But if you're able to, then let's close your eyes. Otherwise, if you're doing something and you can't meditate right now, you can just listen. And you can listen with an awake mind, and you can just pay attention with the intention that later you'll be doing this. And so if it's safe for you, we're closing our eyes now and imagining the possibility that at every decision point in your life so far, there are other possible yous living out every single other path you could have taken. So visualize how many of those other possible yous have gained tremendous strength, courage, confidence, wealth, happiness, and health. Imagine that you can live a happier, more prosperous life by making a leap into the realities in which you have those qualities you'd most like to have. And that each time you make a choice and take an action, you're making a quantum jump. As you're listening and thinking about this, another powerful thing to do is to breathe as deeply as you can. This is the nature of your ki, your life force energy. And you can just focus that by breathing in through your nose. And breathe in slowly. So just imagine you're going 1,000, 2,000, 3,000. And exhaling either through the nose or the mouth. And exhale fully. And when you're breathing in and exhaling, you want to be breathing down to your belly button, actually a little below that. This is the way babies breathe when they're first born. You can see any infant doing this. It's the way master-level martial artists and Qigong masters do this. And it's absolutely essential to your best manifesting. So I'm just throwing that one in there as an extra bonus. When you do those two together, your life will improve 1,000-fold. And you can make this a daily practice. So that's a very simple thing, very powerful thing. And breath is the key to it. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think that's, because the other thing that I think when I think of the quantum jumps is the notion of what you call it, like a time machine.
Yes.
That you
yes,
go forward
exactly.
and backwards.
Right, because we do this all the time, and most of us aren't really aware of it. You know, our memories are the way we travel to the past. And we often don't give ourselves credit for being the time masters that we are. You know, we love shows like Doctor Who because he's a time lord. Each one of us can be a time lord. And it's really about bringing mindfulness to it. So one thing you can do when you're reviewing things from your past, like today we talked about the example, you've broken up with an ex, maybe it's a boyfriend or a spouse, maybe it's just a dear friend and you've had a parting of ways, but you can bring a healing to that and bring a sense of what some people call closure by seeing the value in it and looking back with what I call hope for the past. And I know it sounds crazy, but actually what we're doing is when you jump to another reality, you've changed the past as well. And you can, with gratitude and hopefulness, look back at your past. The hope can be that you are finding the lessons and the gifts that you've learned. The gratitude is bringing a blessing to your past. Keep in mind, you can jump to a reality where your past has changed. I'm repeating that again for people that might be new to the concept. And let me explain what I mean. If, for example, someone's listening and they've got cancer, they want it to go away, you're going to be jumping to a reality where you might remember that you had cancer, but other people might think you didn't. That might be part of the change that's happening when you make that jump. Sometimes people around you have different memories of what's happened. I've seen this quite a lot, and I've written about it for decades, yep. but I'm not going to get into all the details. Just imagine that that could happen, and that's okay. This happens all the time. I talk about a little bit of the what I call alternate histories in my book, Quantum Jumps, and there's a science behind it. People do study it. I think the full meaning of it has basically been missed by most people until they really take a serious look at this model of the holographic multiverse and the fact that we're experiencing quantum effects, that we are quantum jumping. When you look at that, then you realize, wow, now I see why people's memories of the past can be so different, not just for ourselves, but between us and other people. This is very much a part of welcome to the quantum age. You know, we are moving through a quantum universe. So we now have fields of quantum astronomy. We're going to see the field of quantum psychology. Every single science is going to have the word quantum in front of it because we're going to start to need to understand. I know it sounds funny. We're going to have quantum law. We're going to have lawyers that ask the questions like, okay, what if our witnesses actually do remember things differently? How does that affect the case when what we thought we were studying, maybe we're in a different universe of possibility now? We're not in a world of black and white anymore. Every single field of study, profession, science, and business is about to be transformed. And it all started, and I'm saying this all began in September 2013, so we're in it right now. And the children being born right now are going to get this at a level much deeper than we do. They're going to be the ones playing with these quantum computers. We'll think of it as toys, and we'll think, oh, they, you know, look at that, how cute. But they're going to get this at a much deeper level than those of us who, you know, have subconsciously adopted classical information age, you know, classical thinking. That's kind of old hat stuff right now.
With this one part, you know, when you talk about Schrodinger's cat and where he's both dead and alive.
Right.
And that goes back to the notion of a holographic universe and goes back to me also. It ties into the idea of fate and determinism, which you speak of in your book.
Right.
And they all sort of are all entwined to me because it's this never-ending dream in one state or another. So you're looking at physical reality, dream realities, imaginal realities, all seem to have a place.
They do. And people have different levels of comfort in these areas. So myself personally, I love meditation. It's because I was a childhood near-death experiencer. So all my life I tend to happily go to that place of just pure love and all possibility. But I appreciate that a lot of people are very analytical, they're very rational, and for them they need a different approach to, you know, to find their way into this blissful world of that doorway to all possibility. But for them, I would say there are lots of ways you can make that bridge that gap and make some small changes. And that's why I've got a whole bunch of, you know, dozens actually of scientifically laboratory-tested ways you can do quantum jumps. You know, little things that may seem very simple, you know, to be happier, to have more confidence, more willpower. And the reason I include so many of them is for people that are what you might call left-brain thinkers, very analytical, very rational. And for them, it's hard for them to picture, like they might not get that thing of, you know, pure love and the gateway and going through that. It sounds nice, but they don't know how to do it. And so I like to lead people in baby steps, you know, whatever it takes, just to let them find their way and recognize, you know, try these simple things. You know, you can do something so you can feel smarter, happier, have more willpower in just a matter of seconds. Give that a go and see if that makes a difference for you. So,
well, there was one thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, there was something in your book that you talk about, which, we, you know, when we talk about this holographic universe and projecting our word out into the field, is a mathematical matrix of which we will come back and experience as how we measure ourselves, how we measure our time, how we measure all parts of our life. And I think that's where in your book you talk about being in a state of gratitude, not focusing in on the negative, you know, focusing on how good can it get. And then there's another part that you talk about, intend to become your ultimate you.
Right. Exactly. And I hope people are, I like to bring up all these scientific bases, like that we talked to today about the God particle, that this is not a symmetrical universe. You absolutely can be your best possible you. It's not out of reach. It's. I think that was good news, and it should have been screaming the headlines on the front page of all the newspapers. God particle found, you can be your best possible you. You know, I would have loved to have seen that.
I like that.
Somehow it didn't make the headlines. But, you know, it's this is your show, and I think everybody that has that same awareness of what's really going on, they can feel that. And I have been waiting for this news, you know, for like 15 years since I started that realityshifters.com website. I have been waiting for that Higgs boson to be found. I've been waiting for, you know, these quantum computers to come out. I've just been like poised and waiting. So when this stuff happened, I was like pouncing on it, like yes. And when I'm seeing that quantum biologists are noticing, you know, birds, they're navigating thanks to quantum physics. Our noses, when we smell things, we're using quantum teleportation in our noses. You know, our bodies and everything around us that's natural and of nature, everything is of the quantum realm. We're all in a superposition of states. But the evidence is everywhere. And now we've got these quantum computers. You know, what more evidence do we need? It's here. The quantum age is here. And so I just want to give people permission. Yes, it's time to be your best possible self. The time has arrived. You know, for those of us, and I'm including myself in this, that have been raised and trained in this Western world, you know, we're expected to find the proof, you know, look for the science, you know, find the evidence that our wild, crazy hypotheses might be true. We are now seeing what I would call, you know, a balance of evidence and proof to suggest for sure we are in that holographic multiverse, we are making quantum jumps, all of those possible realities are out there. You don't have to choose a bad one. And I think most of us have had, well, it's true. I mean, really.
Sorry.
We don't, you know. I know, it sounds crazy and funny. But people
no,
want to,
but, yeah.
The reason I ask how good can it get is to untrain what probably for most people is years, if not decades, of expecting the other shoe to fall, you know, looking for what next. You know, these are not the right questions. You don't want to ask for the other shoe to fall. You don't want to ask what next. No. You want to ask how good can it get. You want to have that sense of excited expectation, no matter what the news is. Remember, you know, when news comes, it's just news. And there's always something much deeper going on. There's a hidden order to this holographic multiverse. And there's so much more going on that's much greater, far greater than any one of us can possibly fully comprehend. This is what Larry Dossey was talking about with One Mind. This is why the near-death experiencers, the meditators, the lucid dreamers have the edge, because they are accessing that totality of reality where everything comes together in that pure energy state, that pure consciousness state, that realization, wow, I'm not my body. I am my consciousness. I am the jumper. I'm not the shoe. The body is the shoe, you know. This body is just the clothing. It's just the shell. It's the human spacesuit. You can jump into any spacesuit you want to jump into. You can choose your best possible self. And yes, gratitude is so powerful because remember, you're affecting your past and your future. And so gratitude is just locking onto that best. Yeah, that's just locking onto your best possible past, and you can do that too. Lots of ways to get there.
I don't know what page that one's on.
Yeah, this is, well, we're trying to dance through the whole book really fast. I think we're doing an amazing job of touching on a whole bunch of material.
Well, we are, and I think we're not doing too bad either. But why, I like it. You talk about the placebo effect, why be happy, the science of faking it till you make it. Your book is, you know, some of it is just a reminder, and some of it, I love the exercises. And I think what I left with the feeling was a greater sense of wonder for the universe we live in, for the various realities, for the way we can shift and the way we can jump into states. I mean, I had a great time this weekend with all these exercises going everywhere.
That's
I did.
Awesome.
It was great.
And keep doing it. I think the key to this whole thing is keep, and the more you invite other people to play this and say, you know, just the more people you've got in your entangled, coherent, quantum jumping team, the easier it is for all of us to experience the best possible reality. We can bring heaven to earth, and it really is like raising that net of consciousness. And that's what I love about your show. You're doing it. I mean, you are living, you're walking your talk, you're right there in it, and I love that. But everybody listening can do that too. And even if you just talk to one person and ask it as a question, like, what do you think? You think it's possible that there are many possible ourselves? And just put the question out there. You can ask people, how good do you think this can get? Questions are powerful ways to plant seeds, and that's what I invite everybody listening to do.
And I'm going to say the book is called Quantum Jumps, An Extraordinary Science of Happiness and Prosperity. And you can find Cynthia at the realityshifter.com. So, I mean, do check it out. And it's been really fun. And thank you so much. I know you and I will stay in touch anyway. And with that, we're going to end the show. It's been our hour and 1 minute. Thank goodness for Blog Talk Radio. And I just want to say thank you to the Awakening Zone. They are always so gracious for allowing. There are 50 other radio hosts here, and always do dial into the awakeningzone.com. They do workshops here. So that's actually how they pay for the radio stations for hosting us to be online and to continue our adventure and learning. And, you know, I always think everything is timely. So, Cynthia, you are so timely in my life. I am so grateful for you. And thank you, everybody, for listening, and have a great day. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Awakening Zone Radio Network, offering insights and inspiration for our evolving consciousness.